This week, we say goodbye to the Jaguar F-Type and dive into Chrysler's ownership of Lamborghini, unravel the perfect combo of Fiat and Mazda's shared platform, and ponder the fact that the Nissan Skyline was labeled as a luxury car when it debuted in 1957. All that and more coming your way right now.
It's time to cruise the highways and byways of the auto industry's past, present, and future. Join us in exploring the vehicles, people, events, and places that have shaped the way we move. This is the Drive History Podcast.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Drive History Podcast. Maybe it's not afternoon, maybe it's the morning. You can listen to this anytime you want because it's on the internet and that is a magical thing. I am Brian Corey, joined by Jordan Stead.
What's going on, my friends?
And we are here to tell you a little bit about automotive history, news, and all the things that sound like they're worth knowing. I got nothing. I need some taglines. I was about to turn into NPR jazz, blues, and NPR news.
It's true.
This week we're covering April 23rd through April 29th. But Jordan, why don't you kick us off with a little news?
Welcome to episode 11, my friends. We're kicking it off with just a little bit of a sad note, is Jaguar is going fully electric. And the F-Type, which is the two-seater, can be had in a convertible F-Type. Convertible. Wow, what am I saying? What am I saying? The F-Type.
Man, what's in that can over there?
Jesus Christ.
Cooper convertible, F-Type.
Yeah.
Sayonara.
Goodbye. Goodbye, internal combustion-wise.
Yeah, it's pretty... It's 75 years of Jaguar that they're announcing this on, and they're literally killing their only sports car, which is what Jaguar started as.
And I feel like it's a little bit of a canary coal mine situation because, well, to me, the F-Type has always been a sleeper vehicle. Not visually, because they don't look like they're sleepers at all. But I feel like they're kind of this very specific choice for people who wanted a loud, raucous, fun, overpowered sports car.
Totally.
And sure, you could buy a 911 or you could buy something else, but it was kind of like choosing the less precise but more brash / fun version of what you could have, like, but you did it because you're kind of a D-bag in a good way.
You don't accidentally buy a Jaguar.
Yes, especially an F-Type.
Yeah.
And maybe this whole news thing for me is really just because the first gen of the F-Type was tuned to have all this crazy exhaust overrun. They like cracked and popped and they were making all this noise between shifts. They were just so noisy. And I'll never forget when I saw one new and in the mid 20 teens, maybe when they came out, and it was no shit the loudest like stock car I'd ever heard in my life.
Oh yeah.
Like coming down the street, I mean, they literally sound like you're in the middle of warfare. And then a couple weeks ago, I was in Palm Springs for my father-in-law's 60th birthday, and my brother-in-law was sitting with me at a table at this sort of outdoor restaurant in Palm Springs. And I noticed that there was a first-gen Jaguar behind him parked on the street.
This seems like a place where you would see these types of cars.
Totally. It was also wrapped in gold, which is...
Come on.
Yeah, bad move there. But anyway, you still own a first-gen Jag F-Type. Cool. Wrapping gold, not so cool. Anyway, we was sitting there behind him for like an hour and we're having a conversation. And I finally see somebody get into the car and fire it up. And, you know, this thing...
Was it Tom Cruise?
No, it was... I don't know what was going on there. But it was someone who would wrap their car in gold. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Anyway, they get in, they fire this thing up. And it's like... It literally sounds like an explosion, for one, on the street when they fire it up. Because it's like a cold start, even though it's 80 degrees outside. And it's crackling and popping. And then the guy floors it, you know, drives off first to second to third shifts. And it sounds like a shotgun's going off between every single shift. And then, you know, it's vanishing off in the distance and the sound is reverberating off of all of these buildings. And my brother-in-law, who is the man and who also loves cars, goes, God, what was that? Like, what was that sound? And I go, oh, it was a Jaguar F-Type. And he goes, wow, that thing must have been super tuned and crazy. And I was like, actually... It wasn't at all. the absolute psychopath dreamboats who work at Jaguar tuned it that way is stock. And if you ever hear a first gen F-Type, you'll know, because it's the loudest stock car ever, and it sounds like a 16-year-old tuned his VW GTI.
Dude, you've sold me.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. And it's funny, too. I was reading the Car and Driver article about how the F-Type is going away. And, of course, they mention in the article, it doesn't crackle and pop like the first gen did, but we'll still miss it just as much. And I swear to God, every single article I've ever read about the F-Type has always referred to how loud the first gen was. Just stock. Because people miss it and loved it and thought it was cool.
Wow, so it feels like we really only missed the first gen.
We kind of do.
Yeah.
Although they have not, in my opinion, I don't think they've changed the styling in a crazy way. It's always looked beautiful. It's very cool. It's a very distinctive looking car.
It does pay homage to the original, to the E-Type, actually. They're from the 60s.
Yeah.
Long bonnet. Cool cabin. Yeah. It's a beautiful car. I'll give them that.
Anyway, I fucked up that whole first part of the announcement of that. But the point is it's sad. We're losing the F-Type. Buy one used and make a bunch of noise if you can.
There you go. Vroom, vroom.
Yeah.
Should we dive into a little bit of history?
Let's go.
All right. April 23rd, 1987. Chrysler buys Lamborghini for an estimated $25 million. That's insane to me, because you could buy 25 Lamborghinis for $25 million now.
Yeah, that's insane. Also, 87 was not that long ago.
It was not that long ago, 36 years ago. Yeah. And it's just one of those things, too, that's like people tend to forget or miss all these acquisitions and sales of brands in the auto industry. And for Chrysler, having just been essentially bailed out at this time by the U.S. government, then goes and buys an Italian sports car brand, puts a bunch of money into it, launches the Diablo, which nets for the first time $1 million profit for Lamborghini. For the first time ever, they made $1 million in a year.
Oh.
And Lamborghini was 30 years old at this, or 20 something years old at this point.
Also iconic car.
Right.
Late 80s Diablo, amazing.
Right. So it's just a weird tale. They didn't hold on to it long. Chrysler sold it in 94 to like an Indonesian investor group. And then now, of course, Volkswagen owns it.
What a saga. Like, I was just reading this sentence. Like, you made it sound way better than the way you wrote it here.
Yeah.
Let me just read it the way that he wrote it initially. 1987, Chrysler buys Lamborghini for an estimated $25 million. Launches the Diablo. Sells to an Indonesian investor group in 1984. VW later purchases it. Like, what an insane
sequence of events.
Yeah, what is happening here? This is such a violent history.
Bam, bam, bam. Yeah, well, it didn't work out for them then, and Chrysler's still trying to figure out its identity, so.
Well, thank God this all happened the way that it did. I think we're in a better spot now.
I think so. Okay, onward and upward. April 24th, 1957, the first Nissan Skyline is introduced. It was originally marketed as a luxury car. Would you consider it now, we're on the 13th generation, to still be luxury?
I don't have the license to say. I've spent very minimal time in Skylines. I think it's probably like history's idea of electric car.
Yeah.
So at the time, it was probably very luxurious.
Right.
I've been in most recently an R35 Skyline. I would not say it's a luxury car.
Is that what you were cruising around in Japan?
Oh, that too. Yeah, actually, you're right. I've been in several R35s. One here in Washington that was tuned to like 700 something horsepower, did a launch, almost crapped my pants. And then the one in Japan, which was also tuned to that, but we drove at 30 miles an hour all night. So
right.
I would not say it's a luxury vehicle at all. In fact, man, this might be the hottest take right now. And maybe this is the hot take of the episode. In my head right now, the R35 is the same level of quote unquote luxury that you would get from a BRZ. Feels the same, similar sort of materials, similar kind of seat, the way it holds you. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe I'm off base. To me, that's kind of how it felt.
Why do you think the Skyline is so desirable and like iconic here in the States. I'm sure it is in Japan, but I can't speak to that. But I know now, especially with the 25-year rule, you know, so what are we on? R34s can now be imported, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're starting to see them around town. You're starting to see them at shows. There's tons of R33s and R32s everywhere, it seems like. What made them hot?
I think it's the scarcity protocol.
Yeah. Well, you know, literally growing up with like Fast and the Furious and Need for Speed and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like now you can buy your video game car.
Yeah. I mean, if you live anywhere but Japan, the reason why you're probably into 1990s JDM cars is Fast and the Furious.
For sure.
Let's be completely honest. Like whether you want to like admit it or not, that's my personal connection, and every single person I know that's into those cars is
right
into them because of Fast and Furious.
I think you hit the nail on the head with that one. I kind of want one. I've only driven one Japanese right-hand drive car. That was a stick, and that was a little bit of a learning experience. For sure. That was fun.
I do think it's just all scarcity protocol though. Like I think we're at maybe, I think we may have just actually another hot take, just past peak Skyline in the US.
Oh yeah.
Because I think right as the 25-year hit and the R34 was like thumbs up, let's do it. You know, I've seen more R34s in the past year than I have ever before in my life,
sure.
Obviously, right? Naturally. Sure. But simply because of that, our stupid pea brain human brains are like, well, I'm seeing them more, and so they're not as cool anymore, and so therefore the parabola of value and interest of seeing them, I think, is going to now begin to slowly or maybe rapidly drop off depending on how much.
Well, do you think that'll just lead into the next generation? Like now everybody's anticipating getting an R35 and they're gonna be saving up and contacting their local importer,
right? Well, you know what's weird about that? This is the weirdest part. It's a great question, actually. It's a really good question because the U.S. never got any Skylines, right? Until the R35.
Oh,
right. And the R35 was introduced in the mid-2000s, right? So 2009, I believe, is the first one.
Okay.
But it essentially, visually, has been unchanged since then.
Wow.
And it's now just ending. So if you think about it, the R32, R33, R34, especially the R34 that everybody wanted.
Right.
Everybody wanted it. Now you can get it.
Right.
So the scarcity protocol is gonna wind down.
True.
And people have been driving R35s in the States for 15
That's
years.
That's true. That's fair.
So they're not scarce.
But they're not right-hand drive.
That too.
That's interesting to see if that'll have an impact on the fact that if people want them or not.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're going to see a lot more Skyline R34s and backward in the States, which I'm psyched about. But I do think the like internet hype craze, $250,000 paychecks to buy them, is just naturally going to drop off.
Totally.
It has to, right? It just has to.
I think you're right. April 24th, 1975, the last Citroen DS was manufactured. This was the first mass-produced car with hydropneumatic suspension. And if you're not familiar with this vehicle, it kind of looks like a potato bug. It's long. It's just like this oval shape. But it rides on air. And is well regarded for its just comfortable ride. It looks goofy as hell, but it'll get you where you're going in style and comfort.
It's cool.
Yeah, I kind of want to get down on one. I've never been in one. April 25th, 1940, the final Duesenberg Model J was completed. It was delivered to a German artist, Rudolf Bauer. This is interesting because Duesenberg, being a ultra luxury car producer throughout the Great Depression, selling cars for $20,000 when a Model T could be had for $400, you know. They closed down because everybody was broke in the 30s. And I think they closed in like 1935 or 7 or something like that. But there was a ton of leftover parts. And so this last one was just kind of hand assembled at the factory years later. So kind of cool. It's one of those brands that has been resurrected several times but never really taken off.
Mm-hmm.
April 25th, 1959, Mario Andretti makes his racing debut driving a 1948 Hudson, and he won at Nazareth Speedway in Pennsylvania. I need to check in on his involvement with F1, right? Did you read about that? How he was trying to buy his way into Formula One, like having a team.
I do recall, yeah.
But they like sent him a letter saying they didn't want him to be in F1 or something.
Also, shout out winning your debut, by the way.
Right?
Yeah.
Nailed it. April 26th, 1948, Ford begins production of its 1949 models. It was the first major car company in the U.S. to unveil an all-new vehicle since the breakout of World War II. There were some kind of obscure brands, Tucker, Kaiser, and a few others that had put out cars, but Ford kind of set the bar in terms of how styling would look for like the next 6, 7, 8 years with those models. And they're still super popular. They call them shoebox Fords. They're just like kind of two boxes sitting on top of each other. They're cool. April 26th, 1983, Honda becomes the first Japanese automaker to produce cars in the United States with the opening of its plant in Marysville, Ohio. And I need to correct myself because the other day I mentioned... Or on a previous episode, I mentioned that when Volkswagen came to the States in like the late 1970s, they were late to the game, but I am mistaken. I didn't realize they were one of the early importers to get into the States and actually be making cars.
Seems late, right?
It does seem late. It seems, yeah. So I will shout out Marysville, Ohio, because I grew up in Marysville, Washington.
Yeah.
But
sister cities, but not.
Yeah, right. Mm. I've never even, no, that's not true. I've been to Ohio. But yeah, what was happening with Honda in the 1980s, early 1980s? I feel like the Civic was probably becoming a big thing.
I believe it was kind of, yeah, just starting to kind of gather
some steam.
Some steam, yeah. I mean, the late 80s into the 90s is really true Civic times.
Yeah.
At least as far as, you know, I guess my brain equates it to be the CRX is really for me.
Oh man,
like the beginning of that that like major Honda craze, tuner craze, late 80s into 90s.
That's right. CRXs are pretty cool.
So cool.
Yeah,
yeah. And kind
was
of
there a back seat in those, or were they just a little two seat?
I should know the answer to this. I believe there was a back seat. I can't imagine it was very
comfortable,
viable.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they're great looking cars. Talk about a design that while dated still holds up decade after decade, right? It's kind of, we've talked about like the early 2000s and kind of like the, what would you call that era? The
retro neoclassical.
Yeah. Neoclassical. Like I feel like the CRX could have been released at that time and done great.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Like it just has this kind of timeless, almost RoboCopy kind of style
totally.
To it, where you're like, oh, this is cool because I know that it's cool because it was cool at a different time.
Right. Yeah, my buddy D'Angelo had one in high school, and I was always impressed with it. It's a cool car. Well, there's like the CRZ now, or there was.
There was.
CRZ, and I think that was, you know, modeled after that.
Yeah.
A little hot hatch.
Yeah, and the CRX weighed like 4 pounds.
I need a hot hatch hot take.
Ooh.
Give me some your top three. What do you got?
My God.
I know. On the spot. I'll give you one of mine. And you actually have been fueling this fire for me a little bit.
Ooh.
But I'm kind of back in the mini game.
Okay, here we go.
The Cooper Works.
Yes.
I want the Clubman, the longer one.
Yep.
But it would be great to get a Cooper Works little mini hot hatch and just row all six gears over and over.
Okay, so here's going to be the hard part for you. You had the stick shift R56
yeah.
Cooper
yeah.
S,
yeah,
which means it was turbo.
Yeah.
It was the quote-unquote fast version, but it wasn't the John Cooper
Not
Works.
Not John Cooper Works.
So I think what's going to happen if you go down this path is... you've painted yourself into a corner where you need to get the John Cooper Works. Because if you get a bigger version of the Mini you had, it's going to weigh more.
Right.
And so you're going to remember what it was like to drive your initial one and be like, well, why does this feel slower
right.
and bigger?
Right.
So now you need to up the power if you're going to get a bigger version of it. And then you'll be all right. So I think it's John Cooper Works only for you, my friend.
Yeah, you are correct. Mm-hmm. Man, and we were talking about the in-house brands. John Cooper Works is another one.
Yeah.
But Yeah, and then there's the Paceman, which is like the the bigger Cooper,
yep,
basically.
Which I don't think I've ever even seen.
They only made it for like 2 years and not very many of them.
Yeah, it's a dumb name.
The Paceman, yeah, I mean, it was like, it's a weird choice for sure. But it was when they were also making like the convertible, or not the convertible, the little coupe one, like the two-seater one.
Yeah.
So they were trying all these like weird experimental minis. And that one's cool because all-wheel drive, there was a John Cooper Works version, it was a manual, it was turbo. So yeah. It sounds kind of fun.
My thing with the Mini Coopers, especially basically since the early 2000s, is, and this is maybe just a personal problem because I'm an idiot, is if you parked all of them in a warehouse and you turn the lights down real low and you're like, Jordan, come in, tell me which one is which, couldn't tell you. They all look exactly the same to me. Like, I know they're different sizes.
Yeah,
and you know,
I
there's
hear
like,
you.
They just don't, they're not like signature
not a
enough.
Little differential.
You know, or markings, like even yeah. from a John Cooper Works thing, I would see the little surfboard, which is also kind of a weird little.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
But like, I would see the logo and be like, oh, cool, that's the fast one.
Right.
But then I would look at all three other trims and be like, that looks exactly the same.
That's fair.
I don't know. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, they are a brand that came up with a design. You know what? BMW bought them in the late 90s, came out with the like the new Mini after making the old Mini for 50 years.
Right.
And that look is still how they look to this day.
Yeah.
I mean, they haven't changed it up, but I mean, it's an iconic kind of design.
It is.
So yeah. I don't know. But yeah, what would a Mini look like that didn't look like a Mini?
Yeah, that's true. But hot take wise, hot take, hot hatch wise, man, that might be a whole nother episode. It is going to be another episode.
Okay.
But I mean, shit, like
Civic Type R.
There's just so many.
Yeah. We got to start writing these other episodes down.
There's somewhere in a Google Doc. Man, what comes, you know what? How about this? Let's play this game. What comes to mind immediately is maybe the best way to do this. Obvious take. Love a Golf R.
That's what I was gonna say.
You know, I love a Mark 7. Mark 8s are cool. I tend to like the lines of the 7 a little bit more.
The original hot hatch, the AMC Pacer with the V8.
That's right. There you go. Yep. I've always kind of, this is not a hot hatch, but I've always kind of been partial to the Audi. Oh God, what is it? The Q3. Q3, it's like a weird, I was always surprised they didn't make like a hot hatch version of that for the US. I bet you they did in Europe because Europe is cool.
So you say Q3 and you look at me like I'm supposed to know what you're talking about. See, my problem with Audi and all these brands that just name things letters and numbers, like I don't know the difference between those. Like you're talking about like going in and looking at all the different Minis and not being able to tell them apart. Like sure. I can't hear
yeah
the difference. in the names like that. So.
It reminds me of this. I saw this meme the other day of it was like making fun of car people or whatever. And it was like from the perspective of some girlfriend, like pointing the camera at her boyfriend and yeah. they're trying to have a conversation and like the boyfriend's talking. And then a car drives by like way back in the distance. Like you can hear the exhaust note from like blocks away. And he's like, oh yeah, that's a 2008 335i 100% with an X pipe. Everything is, you know, it's tuned, but yeah. like, and like, I was joking about this because frequently I'll be in the car or in my house with my wife and I'll hear a car in the distance and I'll just be like, oh yeah, that's a 350Z, like 2007. She'll be like, how the fuck do you know that? And I'm like, you know, it's a great question. I don't know why I know that, but I just know it. Okay.
Yeah, so. Totally. I mean, I spent a lot of time on the freeway as a kid, just like looking out the window and being like, Hyundai, Ford,
right.
Just like being able to pinpoint what stuff is just off like seeing them in a flash and yes. hearing what they sound like. Yeah, so I get it.
And this is the origin story of why we're doing this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, at the end of the day. But man, I don't know. Give me your hot hatch. What's the hottest hatch right now on your mind? Like, give me something.
I think that was it. It's the Mini.
Yeah.
That or
Volvo T5? Oh,
man, that's what I was just going to say.
Hey.
The CX-30 or whatever.
Yeah, 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 right. T5 is not a thing. What am I saying? That's a trim level or something. Yeah, you're right. C30, yeah, those are cool.
Yeah, they're cool.
They are cool.
Yeah, we'll have to explore that a little further.
Well, hot hatch episode coming in the future. Don't you worry.
Dropping. April 27, 2009, General Motors announces the end of Pontiac.
Mm.
I think Pontiac was founded in like, well, it was originally called something else, but like 1907. And so that's a long run. That's a pretty good run. But it's always sad. All they closed a bunch. Well, actually, I'll mention another one here in a little bit, and we can talk about it more then. But the end of the 2000s was a rough era for a lot of car companies.
Yeah, my good buddy Chris had a Firebird.
Yeah.
And he was just in love with that car.
I bet.
And it was the V6 or 6 inline. I don't even know what it was, a 6-cylinder version of it. And God bless the man. Shout out Chris. I hope you're listening. But I don't think he ever knew there was a WS6 version, which is the V8, big, powerful, heavy, crazy.
That's what he needed.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, man, if you think you love this one, wish you had the WS6.
Rip Pontiac. April 27th, 2014 marks the closing of that year's New York Auto Show. But at that show, a number of cars debuted, including the updated Mini Countryman and the Alfa Romeo 4C for 2015.
Oh.
That's a cool little sports car, I guess.
The ultimate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's all it is.
Yeah.
There is no other way to describe the 4C.
Yeah.
I always forget about this car.
You could call it red. You could call it fat. I can describe it a lot.
That's right. I would love to drive a 4C. I think my previous Abarth ownership made me think the 4C was even cooler than it already is. A lot of people don't know this, but they were like a carbon bucket style body. Oh. So the whole thing is like a, I think the term is monocoque, like whatever it is. The whole cabin of the vehicle is a big carbon bucket. So they're super light. They've got a turbo 4. They're, of course, very Italian, all the emotions, and like you can hear the blow off and the turbo and all the sounds. And it's just like this raucous little,
there's just red wine coming out of the exhaust.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like, I feel like, man, check me later when I say this about another car. I feel like the 4C is if I could turn myself into a vehicle, that's like truly what I would be.
That's an interesting,
just this weird, semi-bizarre looking, misshapen, yet cool, kind of fun, loud, yet also could be a daily driver, just fun, weird vehicle. And it's kind of fringe, and it's kind of not. And
did we get that here ever in the States?
We did. We did get it.
Okay.
Here.
I don't think I've ever seen one in person.
They're beautiful cars.
Yeah.
There's also an 8C. Which is extremely rare.
Okay.
And is even more powerful. And that's a Europe only thing, I think. But it's like monstrously faster. But
you know, I wonder, like we talk about, oh, I wish we got that here from Japan or from Italy or whatever. What cars do we make in the States that people abroad wish that they had?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's another episode for you. Write it down. Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting is, when you look at, I'm deep in the YouTube automotive car game, as I'm sure a lot of people watching are. And I watch a lot of like British automotive YouTubers, and they're only doing BMWs and Porsches and stuff, right? But every once in a while, one of them will get a Hellcat. Like I remember one of them got a Hellcat, and like the chat and the followership was like, holy shit. This is so cool. We never see this. This is so cool. You got this. And there's just something so bizarre about seeing some British guy in a super British accent ripping down like an English B road in a Hellcat. And it's just such a bizarre thing. The scenery is
beautiful.
Yeah. It's just weird. It's so not right. The match is not right.
Stonehenge.
But yeah. But I'm, 4C for me, I'm actually like the more we're talking about this now, the more I just love them. By the way, you can get them for not a bad price these days.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I've thought about it.
Interesting.
It is the ultimate not dog friendly car.
What's the other convertible that we, the
124.
Yeah. The Spider, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Fiat.
I've seen those around and those beautiful. Are kind of fun cars. Like we talk about like, Miata alternatives and that's one.
It literally is. It was built on the Miata chassis.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
So, hot dang.
In fact, the...
Does it share a drivetrain?
Don't know about the exact drivetrain, but it's built on the Miata chassis.
Interesting.
And what's really funny about this is, so the 124 Fiat, they made an Abarth version.
Oh, yeah.
And both Spider convertible and otherwise, yeah, hardtop as well. So, and it also had a turbo.
Fun.
So remember last episode, we were lamenting the demise of Mazda Speed, right?
Right.
And how the Miata had a turbo at one point. Well, now you can get a modern Mazda chassis,
yeah,
with a turbo, hardtop or not, and in beautiful Fiat Abarth 124 styling.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. They're wow, so
it's
cool.
It's like the best of both worlds.
I agree. I actually agree. I totally agree. And having, as you all know, I had owned a Fiat Abarth 500, that 1.4 liter turbo with a 5-speed, and I think they even made it a 6-speed in the 1.24, would be amazing, because not only was it loud inside of a cabin of a 500, but yeah, imagine with a top down. And you're hearing all, yeah, the sounds of that stupid fucking car, but with no roof on. So cool.
Sounds great.
Yeah, and they're beautiful. There's this one color scheme that's like a red, white, black kind of color scheme on
I
those.
I think I've seen that. Yeah, I think I've seen that.
They're awesome. They're awesome. And you can get them for, last time I checked, low 20s, maybe totally, even the teens now. Like, it's a steal. I would totally get one again.
Might have to put it on the list.
Yeah, what are we doing? I think we just discovered the
best
the
car ever.
Yeah, I'll get a 4C, you get a 1.24 Spider, we'll be
with
set.
With the turbo, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Done.
Yep, done.
Well, still on the topic of Alfa Romeo, on April 28th, 1876, Nicola Romeo was born in Sant'Antimo, Italy. So we can tie that all together.
There it is.
And sharing a birthday, April 28th, 1916, is Ferruccio Lamborghini. So, also born in Italy, of course. A lot of good Italian birthdays on April 28th.
The homeland.
Yeah, love for it. Real.
You know I'm half Italian, right?
No. Like, yeah, like full half Italian?
Yeah, baby, I got the blood like coursing right through me.
Your grandpa's from Italy or something?
Yeah, we're doing it.
Dude,
yeah,
all right.
Explains all that, right?
Man, you're in the mob, aren't you?
I wish. I wouldn't have to drive a 2004 Subaru if I was in the fucking mob.
You're mobbing.
Yeah. At 20 miles an hour, at 18 miles per gallon, with zero sex appeal, but yeah.
Dude, no wonder you're always traveling over to Italy.
I guess.
Yeah. April 28th, 1921. This is kind of fun. Douglas Davidson. And I was looking, but I don't think he's related to the Harley Davidson family. Mm-hmm. But Douglas Davidson became the first person to ride a motorcycle faster than 100 miles per hour when he hit 100.76 at the Brooklands.
Really blew right through, yeah, that number.
Tagged it. Also, it's really precise. I mean, there was not radar back, right, then. Like, you're literally measuring from point A to point B and doing some math.
You know you're in a different time technologically when breaking the 100-mile-an-hour barrier is going 100.76.
Right.
Yeah. It's, yeah, like, whoa, big strides.
Made it.
It's amazing.
Hey, he's in the history books. At least mine.
Yep.
April 29th, 1915, Chevrolet introduced the Model 490, which cost $490. And I put this in here only so we could talk more about car names, because this makes sense. Name the car. Okay, couldn't do that today. We'd be talking about the 445,432.
Yeah.
But,
oh, man.
But that makes sense. Everybody knows. And also, it's just like you're wearing it on your sleeve. Like when you're driving down the street, yes, you're like, I have $490.
Yeah. There's so many like interesting things you could poke at this.
Yeah.
Like, I love how just, it's such a frozen moment in time, too. Like, 2 years could change, and they're like, fuck, we have to change the name of this car.
Right. Was it still $490 when it was used?
That's, yeah, for real. Exactly. That's how you bargain. You're like, I don't think so, asshole. It's no way.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Good one, Chevy.
Oh.
April 29th, 1951.
Hold up. Wait, sorry. Oh. 490. What even is it? What, I've never even heard of that.
Oh, it was just, I'm sure it was a little four or six cylinder.
Oh, it's a 1915. Okay,
yeah.
Yeah. So that thing is a four
it was
wheels.
Model T.
Yeah.
Okay. Adjacent.
Got it.
All right. Yeah.
All right. $490 is starting to make more sense now. Yeah, got it.
April 29th, 1951, NASCAR superstar Dale Earnhardt was born in North Carolina.
Get him.
Get him. He died at the Daytona 500 in 2001. Just to wrap that up.
Yeah.
And ending this history section on a bit of a sad note, April 29th, 2004, the last Oldsmobile is produced, ending 106 years of production. And the last car to come off the line was a four-door Oldsmobile Alero.
You want to talk a little bit about your Oldsmobile connections?
Do I have one?
I don't know. I just feel like you're... You said it was sad news, and I don't think anyone in face of the earth would think it was sad.
Oh, come on. I'll say this. It was the oldest car company at the time when it was shut down, in the States anyway.
Yeah.
And so I feel like there was a lot of 70 to 80-year-olds who are probably pretty sad about this.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think that I have owned nor driven an Oldsmobile in my
entire life. No, I guess I just was equating the Mercury for some reason.
Yeah, that's fair.
It feels very Oldsmobile.
I mean, they were on the same level in terms of you know, who was buying those cars.
Totally. I mean, I don't think we should spend time diving into this at all, ever. But, like, why would someone ever think that Oldsmobile was a good idea as a name for a car company?
Well, it was a name for the founder, and his name was Ransom.
Okay.
That's Eli. Fucking,
that's cool.
Ransom Eli Olds.
Damn. Okay.
And so, if you're familiar with the band REO Speedwagon.
Yeah.
So he first made Olds, which then later became Oldsmobile. It was originally called Olds Motorworks or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is still kind of funny. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah.
But then he left the company for whatever reason, like when General Motors bought it, and started REO. And their car was the REO Speedwagon, which was a sweet rock band from the 70s or something like that. So,
yeah, I don't know.
We're getting way out here now.
Shout out our boy Ransom. Ransom?
Ransom.
I feel like maybe we could have used like a marketing person in the room. Because there's something, I don't know. Oldsmobile, you might as well have named it like Slowmobile or Decrepitmobile. I don't know.
That's
like
fair.
Shout out our older listeners, but I know
you know
what
they should
mean.
Call them is Goldsmobiles.
Because you know they are.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God damn it. Well, okay, cool. Here's some good news for you. In a couple weeks, dear listener, right before Brian and I recorded this episode, went on Turo. Still not sponsored by Turo, by the way.
Holler.
But we rented an Alfa Romeo Giulia Quadrifoglio.
Oh my god.
2018.
Gosh. Just saying it sounds cool.
I know. Quadrifoglio. Yeah, it's so great.
There's the Italian.
That's right. One of my sort of dream cars that I know that I shouldn't responsibly own, we have rented for a day. Therefore, meaning I don't have to own it, but I can drive it. Not have to worry about the repair costs. But we're going to be sharing some seat time in that thing coming up in 2 or 3 weeks. So expect to hear a little breakdown of what that experience was like.
If you got questions about that car, want to know anything about it, let us know. Hit us up, contact@carsandcopymedia.com or anywhere on social media.
Holler at us, share us, love us, hate us, do all the things. We appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Until then, drive history every day.
Goodbye.